door right now. Okay, I wanted to start out with Rosh Chodesh Elul, not Rosh Chodesh Elul, but it's Elul and it's our Rosh Chodesh of sorts. So I made a beautiful idea from the Chofetz Chaim, and hopefully it will give us some direction as we begin the new Zman. So the Chofetz Chaim is most famous for his eponymous work, right, called the Chofetz Chaim. But he writes a sefer, Ahavas Chesed, as well. So Ahavas Chesed is similar to the Chofetz Chaim is often seen as a work of Musar. And it's only a work of Musar because he discusses halachas that people don't keep. But when people tell you there's a halacha that you don't keep, by definition, it's Musar, because I spoke in Shul, not the special Shabbos, the Shabbos before, I spoke about not talking during davening. So, revolutionary concept. So people are like, well, that was an amazing, and it wasn't Musar. I said, I'm just putting it out there. Well, we know these are what tefillah can be, and we have to take advantage of it. So again, oftentimes when you hear something, you realize you're not doing it as Musar. So the Sefer on Ahavas Chesed actually goes through many halachos that come to Menachem Avraham Kaviro, those tzedakah, halachos of Dei Kolon, things like that. But he writes here, it's on page Kufsam of Vav in this edition, he quotes a Medrash. Medrash is in Bereshis Rabba, and the Medrash says, Ein ve'ata, he quotes El Tshuva. The word ve'ata, and now, means Tshuva. You know, the Midrashim are designed in general that they're giving us, you know, insight into hashgachic points that we need to know. And Chazal, sometimes in cryptic ways, couch these ideas, and we have to try to figure out what they're about. Which is why, again, even the stories of the Midrashim are not necessarily to be taken at face value. Sometimes some of them are, so it's hard to decipher. The really exotic ones, I think, are easier to understand. They're not at face value. But Ein Va'ata El Tshuva. What on earth does the word Va'ata now have to do with Tshuva? So the Medrash proves it. Medrash says, Shenemar Va'ata Yisrael Ma Hashem Elokeva Shol Meimah. Pasuk we read not so many weeks ago, Parashas Ekev, and now Yisrael, what is Hashem asking? And it lists it off, right? Everything. Yireh Hashem, Abbas Hashem, Dvikus, Lachas Bidracha, everything is there. Very nice. How does that prove anything? Is the Musar, is the Tshuva aspect of that Pasuk of Ba'ata Yisrael, Ma'ashem Akal Hashem Meimach in Ba'ata, or is it Le'ireh Oso? What should you be doing? You should be following Hashem's ways, and you should be having Yireh Shamayim, and you should have Amkas Hashem, you should have all those things. That's the Musar. It's not in Ba'ata. How does this Pasuk prove what the Medrash is trying to say? Says the Chofetz Chaim like this. But in Batevas Le'iras Hashem, in the words Le'iras Hashem, the Yir Hashem, Nuchalomer Sheramos Tshuva, then we can say that Tshuva has been hinted to. Avalot Batevas Ba'ata, but not in the word of now. Nuchalomer, so we can suggest, Da'akavana Huzeh Ma'ashekasavna. What's the Kavana? The Ikar Koa Hayetzer, Shumata La'adam Lomer, Ayome in the Chopin, Ayome Glass of the Mitzvos. What's the key? The Yetzer Hara knows, right? The Yetzer Hara is smart. The Yetzer Hara knows where Baruch Hashem, the Torah was sitting and learning. Our challenge is not going to Audubon to get lunch. The Yetzer Hara is not going to get us over there. We got eateries here, we got a cap card, we're fine. It doesn't enter, it's not a challenge walking past McDonald's and not walking in. See, it's a horror, right? And our desk talks about this, the Kudus HaBechira, maybe you guys have heard, right? There are certain things that are too easy, so it doesn't bother. And there are certain things that the Yitzhar knows not even worth, we're not quite there yet, so it's not even going to be a battle. So again, for those people, they're talking about the talking during davening, they weren't quite there yet. So, I told them, let's try, this is my big job, let's try not to talk during Chazara Sashatz for the rest of Elul, which was only 2 weeks when I spoke to them. A little something, and maybe they can grasp. Oh. So
So how is the Yetzer Hara going to win?
The way the Yetzer Hara is going to win is he has to strategize. You know what he says? I know they're going to learn. And they're in yeshiva, and now they started a new Zman, and they're going to be excited because a new Zman's a new opportunity, and I may have messed up last time. And, you know, Shnayim Vikra is going to be coming. But you know what? It's almost the end of Dvar. Who starts Shnayim Vikra after I messed up for the year from Parshas Kisavo? Bereishis is right around the corner. I'm going to wait to Bereishis. Procrastination is v'ata. Ein v'ata el tshuva. If you want to be successful in tshuva, you have to do it now. Because it's hard if you push it off to tomorrow, it doesn't happen. And that's what the Medrash means. V'ata Yisrael ma Hashem elokecha Hashem elokecha. And now, this is what Hashem is asking. That's where the key is. The key is when we have those moments of inspiration or we're starting in the Zman, is not to say, okay, let's see what we're going to do tomorrow. Let's see what we're going to do right now. We have a Shir, we have a new Masechta, we have a Baba Kama. We have things to learn, and we're going to start, and we're going to start strong. Because if we say, okay, like what Rabbi Petter mentioned before, and if we say, well, we only have a week and a half of Shir, and then we'll start Rosh Chodesh Cheshvan. You don't have the excitement. You don't have the burn. You don't have the fire there. So that's what the Chafetz Chaim says. Then he writes a little more intensely, but he writes the words of the Chafetz Chaim. V'shamati v'shem gav echad. But if you want to connect it, if anybody needs a Dvar Torah for this week, so before we get to the Chafetz Chaim writes, v'zeo masher ramza atar v'karshas kisava. And the hint to this yisod that the Yetzer Hara is going to try to catch you with va'ata is in Parshas Kisavo, because what does it say in Parshas Kisavo? Hayom hazeh Hashem elokech mitzav kolas esachukim esachukim o'ilav esachukim. This day is when Hashem says you have to do the mitzvah. Why this day? What does that have? We have the whole Torah is telling us do this, don't do this. It doesn't first say hayom hazeh. No, it's a reminder. When you're talking in general, approach to mitzvos, it has to be hayom hazeh. Because if it's l'machar, if it's tomorrow, it doesn't work. Then he writes, v'shamati v'shem go nefan. I heard the name of a great sage. If you want to succeed in this, she'adam zarek l'sha'ar v'nacho shoshet dvar. You have to picture in your mind's eye three things. Echad, the first one is, she'ein lo ela yom echad l'dios. I don't know how many days I have. I have today that I know. I have right now. So I don't know what tomorrow's going to bring. So I have to make sure that I maximize today, because today, you know, we say Yotzer Hamachadesh B'tuvo V'chol Yom Tomei Maaseh Reishis. The reason that we're alive today is not because we were alive yesterday. The reason we're alive today is because the Baruch says that I have something for you to do. You can work today. You can accomplish. I want you to be here today, so maximize today. And you don't get today back. That's what, when it says by Avram Avinu, that Avram was Bo Bayomim, so the Rechaim HaKadosh writes on Bo Bayomim, was that he came with all of his days. Why is that a term for, you know, a long life and the end of life? Because it's really a collection of days. Avram Avinu maximized each day, so when he comes with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, he's got 365 times, 175 years worth of days that he can present, and there aren't those days missing, and there aren't those boxes that haven't been filled in. So he says that's what you need to keep in mind. And Eina the Perik Mishnayis Ether of Gemara Yachta Mashiros Igvata. I have one day that I have to worry about, and I have one page of Gemara. I have one Mishnah. All I need to work. My job is first Mishnah. Arba Avos Mizikin. What do you mean? There's 120, 119 blot here. I have to learn about it. Today I have a job. My job is the first Mishnah. I have to learn the first Mishnah of Bava Kama. I'll master the first Mishnah, and then I'll move on, and we'll keep moving. But if you look at the big picture, then you don't get Tara says, well, you're not going to learn all that today. So you wait a few days, and you know, you take days off, and you know, you go home on Thursday morning for Shabbos, and you come back on Tuesday, you know, those nice long stretched out weekends, and everything disappears. There's nothing going on anymore. And then the third thing is Shehu Yisrael Echad Shehakadosh Baruch Hu Mitzaveh Elokim HaTorah. Who both tell the Kiyum HaOlam. And then the other point that he makes is that a person should say, you know what? The world only survives because Because people are learning Torah. And maybe at this 1 second, I'm the only person who's learning Torah. Right? That was the mindset behind the yeshiva and Volozhin. Right? The Volozhin yeshiva and Rav Volozhiner wanted it to be that Volozhin would be responsible for the Kiyum HaOlam. So they had shifts so that there was 24-hour, right? That's presumably, I'm not going to say the reason why Baruch Hu did things the way he did it, but presumably that's the depth behind the fact that there are different time zones. Why can HaKadosh Baruch Hu make it that everything's the same time zone? Because you had everything the same time zone, then there may be hours when everybody's sleeping. But no, the hours always have to be people awake. Why does it matter? Then people can learn. So there's, even within Bederach HaTeva, the world is designed in such a way that there are always going to be people learning. But a person thinks, I learned my Mishnah, I have today, and I can be Bishvili Nivra Olam. And Bishvili, my task is that the world is going to survive. That's an unbelievable perspective. That's the way of getting that Yitzhar Hara who says, no, Parashas Kisav is not worth starting Sinai Mikra right now. I'm going to wait till Brachos, because I already missed 3/4 of the Sefer Devarim and those 4 difficult Parshos in Vayikra, whatever it is. Whatever the Avod is, and we all have our own challenges, but that's the key. It's Ein Va'ata El Tshuva. And right here, what's our job is to learn and to grow. As Hashem, we'll do it together. But maybe that's again at least the beginning to start with, as we begin this month. Okay, so let's do it. Okay, so I mentioned briefly this morning. Really, what I want to do with you guys is learn together with you. Lecturing probably boring for you. It's not that exciting for me. I want to learn together with you guys. And I think if we work on it together, then Be'ezras Hashem, what we're doing won't just be that you'll pick up information, but it'll be a derech, it'll be a mahalach, it'll be a way to look at every piece of Gemara and every Mishnah and really influence and impact how we can learn. And the starting point for all of it that if you read a Mishnah and you read it slowly and carefully, you will be shocked by how much we can pull out of this Mishnah. This Mishnah will be a perfect test case, and how that's going to line up with Seder. That's my challenge. That's my challenge tonight. I will figure out how to. But again, this is also why I really want you guys in Seder in the morning to be doing Chazara. Because me just even learning it together with you now, if you're not putting it back in and seeing where it came from, see that the Gemara floats. If you're reading a Gemara and you're stuck and you don't understand why on earth did the Gemara just say that, then you gotta stop. Because the Gemara doesn't say things randomly. If the Gemara is switching, then there'll be 2 dots, and then it'll pick up with something new, and that we can understand. Because it basically said, until here. But if it's in the middle of a flow of the Gemara and suddenly it just starts talking about something else, the Gemara doesn't do that. Right? It was written by highly intelligent Yorei Shamayim who were trying to give it to us, the Dvar Hashem, in a way that we could understand. And it's Rashi in particular, who is our friend and our Rebbe, who's going to hold our hand and guide us. Because if Rashi says something, that means that there was probably something that if we were learning it without him, we would not have been able to figure out. So if we start reading it without Rashi and asking ourselves those questions, then we'll see the depth of what Rashi is trying, to do. Okay, so let's start from the beginning. Well, it's only 1 line, so I'll just read it for now. But you guys are gonna get involved. So I apologize in advance for embarrassing anybody. Okay, we're in this together. Arba avos nezikin. There are 4 avos nezikin. So what is, again, first question that stands out right up? We only learned 3 words. What stands out? What do we need to understand? Avos. What does avos nezikin mean? An Av, we know, is a father. Nezikin, we know, is damages. Other than a father beating a child, what does it mean that a father put damages on a father? I don't have to show them, but what are we talking about? Arba Avos Nezikin. What does Avos mean? And if we understand, meaning what makes something into an av. Now, if the Mishnah says that something is an av, versus just telling us that there are four things, and let's take off. You know, what would have been missing had it said arba nizikin?
What about? Like, what do they represent?
If you get it, that's what would have been missing, right? Meaning avos implies.
They're like the heads of the categories.
Oh, right. Avos seems to be telling us that it's more. That avos is something which is bigger. So now let's look at Rashi. He tells you Rashi, our avos nizikin. Okay, stop there. What does that mean?
The categories are called these. They're written explicitly in the Pasuk.
So avos are a thing that we call something which is written explicitly in the Torah. Is that true? Anytime you have something which is written in the Torah, that's called an av. Good. So we have, and we'll see later, we have avos malchus and shabbos. We have in the body of the baby, so you have avos hatuma. Anything else? About it.
Right.
It's about it. So it's not true that every time something is written in the Torah, it's automatically considered to be an av. Right? So clearly we need something else. So on the one hand, right, avos is referring to something which is explicit in the Torah. But on the other hand, if you finish reading the Rashi, what does Rashi say? Why did Rashi tell us that? What would I not have understood? What would have been incomplete had Rashi, and this is a question that I'm going to pound into your guys' heads to answer. Right? We stopped halfway through a Rashi, and the Gemara would have made sense, so why did Rashi keep talking? So what did, right? It's a basic question. We'll see it throughout. If Rashi says something, and it seems to already explain what we need to know, why did Rashi bother to talk more? So again, the fact that he keeps talking tells us that what?
That there's two parts to it.
Oh. Right, so Rashi seems to be addressing, right, what you guys said initially, and that I was sort of being difficult about at the beginning of Rashi, that avos is not something automatically which is written in the Torah. Avos needs two things. Avos needs to be that there are toldos. Avos, like Sri Moshe said, has to be that it's a category. It's the top. Right? And then from the avos are going to emerge the toldos. What tells me, though, if something is an av or not? So yes, it has to be that it's a general category, but what does Rashi seem to be telling us? Is that enough? Is that sufficient? It has to have toldos, but it also has to be written in the Torah. Right? That's what Rashi seems to be telling us here. The fact that something we could view as a broad category would not be enough to call it an av. It also has to be that it's written in the Torah. So the fact that it's broad is what we would call necessary, but not sufficient. Right? It's a component. It has to be there, but that's not enough to call it an av. So says Rashi, the Gemara is going to tell you what the toldos are later on, and that's essential because it could not be an av without there being a toldo. Good. Good. Okay.
It's like saying you can't give me a father.
Exactly, 100%. It's that mashal, it's that imagery that Chazal are trying to bring forth. And we'll see when we get to Hashem to the bottom of the page, when we get to comparisons to Tumah, and we get to comparisons to Shabbos, that how that comparison, how literal we should take that, will come into play. Okay, good. So Arba Avos Ezekiel. So we have four avos being general categories that subsume something else and are written in the Torah that relate to damages. Good? Fine. Back in the Mishnah. So what are the four? So it says Hashor, Vehabor, Vehamave, Vehaheber. Shor Vor Mavever. You gotta just, I don't know if there are any tricks to remember that. You just gotta kinda like pound it into your head because you gotta remember that. Right? Shor Vor Mavever. What on earth are Shor Vor Mavever and Hever? So, we don't know. Right? I mean, we know Shor is an ox, and we know Vor is a pit. We have no idea what a mava is, and we may know what a heaven is, right? Okay, so let's look back at Rashi for a second. Aaron, want to take over Rashi?
Sure. Short about Vor.
Yeah.
The Seder Shem, the Sukkim, the Parsha, they're written the same way they are in the like the order that they are in the Parsha, Sidra, Mishnah, the same order in the Mishnah.
Right, so what question is Rashi addressing?
Why they're written.
Right, not what they are, but why. We have four. How did the Mishnah choose? How did the Mishnah decide what order to put it in? So it's in the order of the way that they're written in the Torah, which is going to be important for us. Because again, Rashi is stressing to us again that these categories are explicit in the Pesukim, are explicit in the Torah. Right? Good.
The Parsha Shalom, that is the first Parsha, Namara Mishur, the Torah. So the first Parsha speaks about the Shor, and the second one comes from the Torah, so the same order.
Good. So now, if Rashi told us the first part is written by Shor, and the second part is written by Bor, what's our job? We've got to look at the Pesukim, right? So what are these Pesukim talking about? So he says the first one is talking about Shor. So, in Perek Chaf Aleph Pasuk Chaf Ches, right, you got so far from Mishpatim, which again is Babakama. Is basically the question of Rashi. So the pasuk is Bechi Yigach Shor Es Ish O Es Isha. So what's Shor? Shor means Goren. If the Shor of a person, presumably, right? If a Shor gores a man or a woman, and that person dies as a result, the shor gets stoned. You can't benefit. And then the owner of the shor is not viable again. We'll have to go through more of those details soon. Now, what happens if you have a, I don't know if a donkey would do it, but a donkey that gores, or I don't know, some other animal that has horns. We're not going to talk about kicking right now. That might be a different category. But is it specifically a shor, or what happens if you have self-driving automobile? Right, which is basically our shor. Right? Shor of the Torah was a shor. Our shor is like a Tesla or something, you know? So what, does it make any difference?
Would that be...
Sorry? Okay, so yeah, no, presumably not, but
maybe it's like a 12.
So maybe it's a little bigger what an operator told us. So Rashi, again, our friend Rashi, on the Chumash here, right away says Vechi Yigach Shor Es Ha Shor Vechi Kol Behema Chai Ba'ov Elo Shadi Bir Akasuv Ba'ov. There's no special Xeris Akasuv that if a shor, if an ox gores, then it's one thing. But if I don't know, you have a falcon. Or I don't know, whatever the other animal would be that could potentially cause the same damage, that's going to be different? No! Shor was the normal animal that people had around and could potentially cause this damage. Okay? So basically, the parameters of a shor being a shor goring a person or what the parsha of shor is discussing. Okay? Yes?
So, when it defines a shor, it means its nature is not to damage. Like, for example, if you had like a very dangerous animal, that almost in the
category. So, that the Mishnah is going to deal with later on, yeah, correct. If you had, in terms of level of Shmira and things like that, Rav Berman alluded to some of that in his shir this morning, then absolutely, there may be differences. So, okay. But let's pause for 1 second right now, because Rashi has raised something which is a little bit of a significant point, which is that when it comes to damages, you can have at least there are at least four categories, theoretically, of damage that could take place, not the arba avos nezikin. Meaning, the damage that's being described by Shor is property damaging another property? Or what was the case, right? If he got Shor as ish or as isha. So the parsha of Shor is a piece of property, a Shor is property, damaging a person. You could also have, what other kinds of cases could you have? You could have property damaging property. You can have a person damaging a person. And you can have a person damaging property. Correct, right? So you have four potential permutations within the types of damages that we could have. Shor, apparently, and we'll have to deal with the other kinds also, and it may affect what Mava is referring to. Shor, Sid is referring to to property damaging a person. Okay? So the category, again, is trying to bring this up because the Mishnah is clear that categories are going to be important. Right? These are avos. So figuring out what category this is, we don't know yet if the Mishnah is going to work on that, figure out which details are significant and which details are less significant. That's part of what we have to figure out. But again, Shor, Sukkim of Shor, are talking about an animal damaging, in this case, killing a person. Okay? So that's the first part of the Sukkim over here. Then it says, right, what was the second one? It was Bor. So Bor, we said, is the next one in Sukkim. The Chiyivtach Ish Bor. So if a person uncovers or digs, right, both are being included there, which when we get to Bor, and understanding the nature of Bor, we'll have to understand that a little bit better. But if I'm responsible for this, right, we said the Rashi is the word takala, right? I mean, it's obstacle. I mean, somebody can fall and hurt and get potentially hurt or killed in this pit. Then the Baal Habor, needs to pay. Okay, so that's the second category. So we have Shor, and we have Bor, which is a unique one. It's going to have numerous unique properties. We'll have to discuss in length at a different point. But basically, Bor is the responsibility of the one who opens it and somebody falls in and somebody gets hurt. Does it talk about people falling in? No. It only talks about Shor or Hamor. So we'll have to talk about that later. But again, if we read the Pesukim carefully in terms of figuring out the categories, it's interesting and noteworthy, and the truth is that the Gemara is going to have a diyuk in the Pasuk and say that it may not be true when it comes to a person. Maybe people are different. I'll figure out why should people be different. Right? We can come up with svaras, but the Gemara is going to work through that. But again, the Pasuk is not talking about a man falling into the bor, it's about an animal falling into the bor. Okay. What's the next one? Mava. Mava. What's Mava? What? Rabbit Shmuel. So Rashi tells us Mava Mefarish for Gemara. Why does Rashi tell the Mefarish for Gemara? Because he knows you're staring at the Gemara, the Mishnah, and you have no clue what Mava is. Why do you have a clue what Mava is? There's no way you should know what Mava is. Mava is almost code word for something else. For something else. So what are the options in terms of Mava? So let's just quickly turn to the Gemara on Gimel Amud Beis. Got the two dots about the 3/4 of the way down. My Mava, Rav Amar, Mava ze Adam, Mushmol Amar, Mava ze Hashem. There we machlokas. I'm not going to say it's the most famous, but certainly up there as one of the most famous machlokasim in all of Bava Kamma. You know, if you want to make sure that somebody knows that you really learned Bava Kamma, just remember this. You'll embarrass yourself. This Rav says that this is referring to a person. Shmuel says it's referring to Shane. What is Shane? Chewing. Meaning damage that's caused. Again, categorically, they're very, very different. Right? Because Rav now is saying Mada is Adam, the now of the four categories that we said beforehand, right? Of property damaging property, property damaging man, property, man. Rav has taken it to a completely different category. Because we were never talking about man doing any damage. Why not? That's a good question that we're about to get to. But we were never talking about that in the Mishnah. Right? There's nothing about man damaging, we don't know what, either man or property. It was not discussed in the Mishnah. According to Shmuel, now it's a detail. It's a detail within the Mishnah. Not just an animal damaging with its horns, but it's also an animal animal damaging with its mouth. But as small as that distinction may be, clearly it's enough according to Shmuel to call it a separate af. Right? It's not a tolda. It's its own category. So we'll have to, again, more when we get to that sugya, but whatever we're going to define, we have to remember it's not just defining what a word is, it's a separate category. So Adam is a much easier category for us to see as being completely separate from Shur. According to Shmuel, that line of demarcation is a little bit less clear. So let's sort of put that in our back pocket. Where are they coming from? So they're coming from the Pesukim. Right? Rav quotes a pasuk that says, the Siv Amar Shomer Asa Boker Vegan Laylaim Tivayim Ba'ayu. So Rashi comments, Amar Shomer Amar HaKadosh Baruch Hu Asa Boker Geula Tzadikim, the Geula is going to come. Vegan Layla, it will be dark for Rishoyim. If Tashu Vishu Tivakshu Mechila Ba'ayu. And if you want to push and inquire and try to do tshuva, great. Why does Mave refer to Adam? It's only because the context of the pasuk, not the word means Adam, the context of the pasuk is talking about man. And therefore, we can see that Mave can be a code word to talk about man. It's even less than an yeah, I guess. I don't know.
I don't really see the connection. I mean, I understand it, but it just doesn't seem like it's relevant to the topic at all.
It's almost not. It's almost like, again, maybe we'll understand this later, but if you think about it in the opposite direction, meaning the Mishnah came first, Rav and Shmuel have to explain the Mishnah.
Right, why did Rav use that word?
Right. Rav and Shmuel don't really explain that. Rav and Shmuel aren't telling us why did Rebbe choose Mave. They're just saying that how do I know what Mave means? Is because there are psukim that mean this. Somehow, and again, I don't have a great answer for it right now. Maybe later I'll have a little bit of a better answer. Why didn't, you know, Rebbe could have very easily answered and dealt with this machlokas by saying Adam or Shane. He chose not to do that. That question definitely right now don't have a good answer for. But it's certainly something we should keep in mind. Because Rav and Shmuel are trying to say, Mavet doesn't mean anything that has to do with damages. They're looking at the Mishnah, and they're just saying, what's he talking about? You know, what's going on? Now, obviously they have the Mesorah, and the interplay between them and the Mesorah, but they were trying to understand. So they said, oh, I get it. Rebbe is hinting with his word to a pasuk used in Yeshaya or Ovadia that's talking about either one is talking about man, one is talking about something which is covered and uncovered. That's talking about Shane. Very, imprecise, but certainly unclear. Why Rebbe would choose to do that? I don't have a good answer for it. We should hold on to that. We should try to, you know, hopefully deal with that at some other point. But you're right. There's nothing about those pasukim that's good. It's got to be Adam, you know. It's obvious. There's nothing about those psukim which makes it almost like, you know, code word. If they're not arguing about what the word means. The word means to inquire, to seek, to ask. The question is, in the context of the pasuk, are we talking about Adam, or are we talking about something which is covered and uncovered, and something which is covered and uncovered? Oh, whatever, that which is covered and uncovered. Upstream. Woo! No, it's a bit out there. It's a bit out there. But again, that's what Mava means. And what does Hever mean? So Rashi tells us that Hever is Kiseitze Ish. Right? We know that Biur Chametz, right? We burn the Chametz. So that Shoresh, Havar on Shabbos is a Malacha, means to burn. Why does Rashi have to tell us which Pesukim is referring to? And Rashi doesn't always tell us, you know, what Parsha it's coming, you know, something's coming up. Right? There, again, it could be the,
fire comes forth from you, it goes to someone else's property.
Yes.
You're still, you're chayav for it. So maybe it's just explaining the context.
It could be. It could be it's just explaining the, it could be it's just explaining the context.
It's like a fetish until you think about it. Like,
oh, it's already been a fetish. No, I'm not. Let me clarify. No, you're right. Maybe what I was saying. It's clear that the Mishnah is referring to what the Pasuk is referring to. Right, because we know that, because Arba Avos Nezikin means Suvim Batorah Vehedya. Right, it has to be referring to it. I was only curious, you know, is there, did Rashi really think that after telling us that Parsha Rishona was written by Shor, Parsha Shniyah is written by Bor, that we would have trouble finding, Kiseitze Eish? So you might say you want to make it 100% clear, but I think maybe, if you look at all the Pesukim, maybe there is a reason, because you know there's a Pasuk. There's a pasuk in between Bor, besides the Kenevo pasuk, between Bor and Eish. You have the pasuk right before Eish says, Eish is Perek Chav Beis Pasuk Ek. You say to Eish, Umatzah Kotzim. You know what the pasuk before it says? Ki Yaver Eish Sadeh Ocher Mishilachas Bi'iro U'bi'er Bistei Acher Meitav Sadeh Meitav Karmo Yishalim. There is a word used in the Pasuk prior that uses the same shoresh of Beis Ayin Reish three times. Do you know how many times the Pasuk of Eish uses that shoresh? Zero. Once, I think zero, right? Oh no, you're right. I apologize. Twice at the end. You guys are good? Good. Twice at the end. But it's not at the beginning. It seems strange, right?
What's the context of the other
pasuk
before?
The other pasuk, Ki Yaver Eish Sadeh Acher, you know what that's talking about? So Rashi on the Chumash has to tell us, because he knows that we're going to be confused. So you know what Rashi says? Kulam Lashon Behema. Beis Ayin Reish in the previous pasuk are all means an animal. Where do you see that? He quotes a pasuk. Kimo Anachnu Uvi Reinu. When Bnei Yisrael are going out of the midbar and they're complaining, they say, us and our cattle. And not who we raise. So you know what that pasuk is talking about? It's talking about somebody letting his animal go in somebody else's field and eating it. Which we would kind of refer to as shame. Right? Maybe that's shame. Right? But I think maybe that the Rashi is hinting to. The pasuk is confusing. You might have thought that that if you're looking at his Pesukim, Hever, you may have thought comes from the Pesuk that immediately comes before it. Again, I'm not saying that there was stuff in there just to confuse us.
Oh, which would make sense, because if you translate Mava as the way Rav does, then you could easily mistake
excellent. Excellent. Right? That's got to be said. If you understand that... Again, if you say like Shmuel, then Mava is referring to Shane. So would I be likely to make a mistake and to think that Hever is referring to Pasuk Dalet of letting the animals go beer? No, because it's basically the same as Shane. Am I confusing it? Got it? But once I know there's another option, and then Mava may be referring to Adam. But I know that there's a great Amora, whose name is Shmuel, who thinks that Shane is an Av. And now I have a pasuk that says v'ha'ever. Okay, I have a mishnah that says v'ha'ever. What's it referring to? Is it referring to pasuk dalid? Ki yaver isha del cherem v'shilach as biro. I send my animal to eat your stuff. He does it because karmel you shalem have to pay for it. Or is it referring to pasuk eight? He says a h that the h is going to go out. Pasuk shalem say ma'avir tzabed biro. So again, I don't know why the Torah chose to confuse us that way.
Is that a lie that Rashi holds like
No. Everybody agrees. I think it's just very vague. Everybody agrees that Hever in the Mishnah refers to H. The Haraya. Rabbi Berman said at the beginning of his shir that there are two that are clear and two that are unclear, and the two that were clear were Shor and Hever.
So why did Rashi put the pasuk to make sure you don't get confused?
I think so. Rashi's helping the other me. You know, I'm looking at a Mishnah and I don't know what's going on.
But we don't want to get confused if we held sheep, if we held like.
No, if I didn't tell you anything, if I didn't tell you anything about Rabbi Shmuel, and I said, look, here's Parshas Mishpatim, and somewhere in pasuk in Perek Kaval and Chavez are all the dalal and the apos mezikin. And one of them is called Hever. Find it for me. Which pasuk is Hever? What would you tell me?
First one.
Certainly a possibility. Right? Certainly a possibility. So Rashi is telling us, don't make that mistake. He says Aish. It refers specifically to Aish. Good? Moyerdik. Now, if we know that there are four Avos Mezikin, and the four of us, the Zikin, are all categories that the Torah tells me explicitly. And the Torah doesn't tell me a fifth. And the Torah doesn't tell me only three. Then what does that fact tell me? That there are four of us, the Zikin, that the Torah has to tell me, and there are no more and no less. Again, the Torah is not trying to tell me absolutely every possibility of the Zikin that I could possibly imagine. Because it only has four cases. And the Mishnah told me that there are avos, which is fine. Which means I can extrapolate. I can develop a rule based on these four cases, and I can see from that rule what else is going to emerge. But what does it tell me that the Torah told me four specifically? That?
These four are the Torah.
That what?
These four rules are in the Torah.
And therefore, the fact that we needed the Torah had to write all four rules.
You can't get one from the
other. Right? It must be that I can't learn one out from the other. Why is that true? Because if I could learn out one of the other ones from this one, then you know what? There are no extra words in the Torah. There are no extra words in the Torah. So if the Torah has to tell me, if the definition of an av is that it's explicit in the Torah, and we have four of them, and only four of them, and there are going to be other things that are chayiv, because toldos are chayiv, and as far as we know, they're chayiv in the same way, right? We don't know any differences between av and a toldo other than the fact that it's written in the Torah, not written in the Torah, right? It's going to have to fit into the rule, then it must be that the Torah had to write these four. And the Torah would have written one, or two, or three, then you know what? Something would have been missing. I would not have been able to extrapolate one of the rules or more of them from the other ones that I have, and therefore I require, it must be that all four of them are written in the Torah. Right? That's ABCs of what's happening. We just put together everything here. If we believe the premise that an av is something which is written in the Torah, and now we've seen in the psukim that all of these things are there, and we know that it applies to other things because there are plenty of toldos out there. We don't know how many, but we'll assume that they're almost, I don't know, infinite might be a little bit too broad, but there are many permutations of what those toldos can be. Then why the Torah write these four? It must be that there would have been no other way to know these avos without it being written explicitly in the Torah. Right? So that means that we need to define what is the unique, what is the special quality of each one of the avos mezikin that makes it into an av, because as we said, an av has to be a category, right? There have to be toldos that can fit into the category. And yet there's not enough overlap between two categories that I can learn one from the other. Because if I could, then... Right, why are the extra words in the Torah? Why would the Torah have written it? Right? Oh. Now if you look at the continuation of the Mishnah, right? All of this, they're both sides, is just in the first few words, right? All this is there, staring at us in the face. But now we know what to move from, clause one of the Mishnah, the second clause. We understand why the Mishnah now is going to proceed the way that it does. Okay? Okay? I read the rest of the Mishnah? No. Okay. Yes? No?
No, maybe a little bit. I need to gain some energy.
Okay, let's go. Want to do jumping jacks first? Okay.
I'll do follow.
Okay, there we go. Okay, now we're in shape. Okay, the Mishnah.
Where are we starting from?
Lo hare, second line.
Lo hare ashor kahare hamava. Lo hare hamava kahare ashor.
Okay, so let's stop there. What does that mean, right? There are two things that should jump out at you right away that we need to understand, right? First one is...
The shore's not like the mava's like the shore.
Right, so we need to understand why that is. Right. The first thing is, what do the words mean, right? What do the words mean? It says, lo, hare, yashur, karev, lo, hare, mava, karev, shore. What does hare mean? But yeah, we spoke about this a little bit this morning, right? What is the word? What does hare mean? That's one thing that we need to understand. And the second thing is Moshe. Do you have a question or?
Oh, no, I was going to answer.
Yeah, go. Yeah.
I think literally, or just like the way you're supposed to read it. I think literally, it's like hare is like behold, like it's like signifying something. Sort
but
of
can
like,
it mean that here?
No. So I think what it's saying here is that.
I don't think it's a question of literary. I think it's a different usage. I don't think it's the same word.
I think it's saying that you don't, the way that you figure out if something is under the category of sure,
yeah,
it's completely separate from the way that you like appraise something to be under model.
Right. So, I mean, the word array means...
separate. Or the way that you...
Yeah, like six words, right?
It's not
a problem. Really madata means and you should teach. It's one Hebrew word and it's four words in English. Not necessarily a problem.
Calculated maybe.
Lo hare ashur, the calculation of the shore.
It's not like the calculation for the mava. Or something being in the category.
I'll be honest, I have no idea what it means. In English. I can't figure out what the word means. I cannot figure out an exact definition. I've looked in dictionaries. I cannot figure out what the exact definition of the word is.
What does Rabbi Gartzkul say?
I don't remember. I didn't check.
How about my bags?
You can check everyone. It was not that. What you're saying is what it means.
Yeah.
Meaning that's what the phrase means. The phrase certainly means that the defining characteristic in terms of this, of shore, is not like that of mava. Right? Abdurari says something along those lines. But if you look at the bold versus the regular, we need the bold. What does the bold mean?
Bald says,
yeah,
the ox is not like the mava, and the mava is not like the ox. So it's like,
so which,
the word low. The
word low is not, so it means
light.
Right,
is low.
Alright. Maybe. It could be. I'm not disagreeing in terms of what the phrase means. It's the same thing you said. They made it a little more concise. But it's basically saying the exact same thing you said. Let's hold on. I'll show you in a second why it's significant to point that out. And then the second question, which should stand out, is the order, right? The order. What happened? We were starting out with a great Musar Shmooz. We're going to stick to the order of the Torah. We got a Musar Cloak on it. Sure, or, everything's in order. And then the Gemara switched it on us. So you say, well, maybe it only makes sense to make comparisons in this order. Then you know what? So switch the ratio. Meaning, why does it switch it here? Those are the two things that stand out. We know what the Gemara is trying to do because we anticipate it. What the Mishnah is trying to do because we anticipate it. We need to have four of them. It must be that they're all significant. We have to have all four. So the question is why? Yeah.
Is this another question?
Yes.
It sounds very repetitive to say Lo Harei Ashor Karei Amava and then Lo Harei Amava Karei Ashor. If you say that one thing is different than something else, like if A is different than B, then obviously B is different than A, huh?
You get B from A.
Right. I'm trying to think of a good example where, if A...
It's like saying if a goat is not a...
it's like saying... Modernization. That's fine. We're good. It's like I can't think of one right now. I think when you're trying to categorize things, it could be that A doesn't fit into B, but B fits into A.
Yeah, but it says, if we translate low RA carry, is like, I don't know if you want to translate that.
It's not exactly that. It's going to be deeper than that.
Otherwise,
you're right. Again, I was trying to figure out what the word means. I'll show you in a second why I'm making a big deal out of what the word means. Okay? But, so let's see the Rashi over here. Okay, so why don't you read the Rashi? Now we did the Mabu one. Okay, Glomar, Rea, Shurka, Arne, Mabu.
So Glomar.
What does that mean? What do you mean Glomar? What does Glomar mean?
That is to say. That means it's the same.
Kilomar, right? The cuff at the beginning. Kilomar. As if to say, right? Right. When does Rashi? Rashi doesn't normally start out by saying Kilomar.
Oh, because he thinks it's very cryptic.
I think this name is bothering Rashi. Whenever Rashi starts out with a klomar, the antenna goes up right away. Whatever Rashi is saying is going to have to be now his interpretation. It's not Rashi just as a mefarish in terms of explaining what words mean, but Rashi's putting something else in there. When does Rashi decide to do that? When it doesn't make sense. Lo harei alone, what does it mean? But Rashi knows what the Gemara is trying to do, what the Mishnah is trying to do. Do you know how we know what the Mishnah is trying to do? Because we know what the Mishnah is trying to do. Because we know what the Mishnah has to do. We know that what the Mishnah has to do right now is explain why I need four separate parshas of damages in the Torah. Because if they were four different categories, right? If I had man damaging man damaging property, property damaging man, and property damaging property, then I understand why I need all those. But all four cases, again, at least according to Shmuel, are property damaging man or property. Are property doing the damaging? It's certainly not four neatly organized separate categories. So if I'm not having that, if I don't have that, then I need to understand why I have them. So we know what Rashi is trying to do. But Shlomo right away tips us off that there's something that doesn't read quite straight in the Mishnah, and now I think we might know what it is. Right, because lo harei, what on earth does it mean? We know what it has to mean, which I think, I think it's one of these things where you're working backwards. We know what the Mishnah means, it has to mean something about comparing them, but we don't know exactly what it means. Okay, so that's klomer. So now Rashi says,
I can't pronounce that.
Mabe.
So what Rashi is saying is that if the Torah would have only written short, would not have been able to derive Mabe from there.
Right. Matu Lahati.
Based on this?
Because of this, right.
It's Tariqa Lumata, so they needed to write also Mabe and Pasa, rather than a different Pasa.
We have a different parts, right? We need to have Sukkim, right? We need to have Sukkim teaching to us explicitly. Rashi's telling us.
It's not an explanation. Like, it should, all he's saying is that you wouldn't be able to learn, but like, why wouldn't you be able to learn? Yeah.
That's the continuation of the Mishnah. Right?
No, because that talks about the difference between fire and the ox.
Why are these two specifically? Does it not tell us what the difference is?
I mean, Tosfos
is going to deal with
it. He just says it's obvious.
Right.
That we should know.
Okay, so that we can figure out. But again, let's just deal structurally first. Structurally, what Rashi is telling us, right? What Rashi is telling us is that this part of the Mishnah, this clause, is coming to tell us what I need all of these psukim. Because if I would have had one and not the other, then I wouldn't have been able to derive one from the other.
Okay.
Right? And then, right, why doesn't Rashi stop there?
Because
he's going to answer another question. Right. Because we said that there were two things that stood out. One was, what on earth does Hare mean? And then the second thing was, why did it change the order? So now Rashi continues talking. He answered question number one by telling us, you're right, it's not exactly, we don't know, I'm not telling you exactly what it means. But I'm telling you what it's coming to do. What it's coming to do is to tell me that it needs to, you can't derive one from the other, and you need to have them both there. Why does Rashi continue talking? Because there's a second question, which is, why did it change the order? We had a Shor, a Hor, a Mava, a Hever, written in the order that the Torah has it, seems perfect, and now the Mishnah switches it. So why does it switch? So Rashi continues.
L'hafi, naka bereisha k'harei ha-mava, lo naka b'l'kiseder lo harei ha-shor k'harei ha-bor. So basically, it mentions in the beginning, k'harei ha-mava.
Right.
And it does not mention like the order, which would be saying like,
it would have been shor k'harei ha-bor. Right, why not?
And mishum, su lo havi matzal l'misni. Because then they would no longer be able to teach the following. Lo zeb zeh, sheish b'han ruachayim. Because the next thing about those two things being alive while the fire is not alive wouldn't make sense, because Bor is not alive, so it couldn't have done that, because the second thing in this and this wouldn't have been something that's real fine.
Right.
Just try to combine them to the real fine.
Right. And apparently that clarity of being able to put it in an order which included ruachayim, which easily put together two. And then why do we have only two? The Gemara needed to make that as clear as possible. So that's why the Gemara. That's why the Gemara switches. Good.
And then okay. I guess one more reason for.
Yeah.
And furthermore, time off would be another reason. Deha Rabusa for this like Kiddush. Ashiman that we learn out we hear. She'afal Gav she'ish l'shneihem ruachayim lo nafu chad mechaber mechaberei. Even though. That both these things are alive, so we still can't have learned one from the other. Meaning they still had to be taught separately.
What does that mean?
What does that mean? So I think what it's saying is that the reason that we have a list of these separate things is because there would have been a Havamina that they're both things that are alive. So maybe if I had one, I'd have to figure out the other. But it's like, no, you still can't. We could not figure them out, one from the other.
So what's the answer? What's different about this part?
The question was, why do we, it's basically, again, why do we, why do they need to have Shor and Mada written out separately? Why couldn't we derive one from the other? And
right.
I think what she's saying is because even though there's something similar about them that, oh, they're both alive, so you would think, maybe, oh, listen, they're both alive. Even though I think this is a big stretch, because like just because one thing's alive, why would I think of that specific other thing that also happens to be something that's alive? Well, but you still can't.
Well, that point, that's one of the few points that I do understand, I think. That point is that things that are alive, you know, let's say they function on their own. So it's more likely that if they function on their own, that they're both going to be tied, as opposed to Bor, which is passive, and then H, which requires something else to intervene. That part I understand. But what about, again, every time Rashi or any of the Rishonim gives an answer and then says, but there must have been something that's, you know, lacking or unclear from the first one. I don't know. Yeah, it's not 100% clear to me what Rashi's gaining with this second shot.
Maybe I think.
Again, what was the first shot again?
You're saying that they're different. You wouldn't be able to learn one from the other. Now he's saying, even though there is a similarity that we established, that they're both Bali Chayim, there shouldn't even be like a Havamina that they would have been able to figure them out one from the other, because they're still different.
Meaning, the first answer he doesn't like. I mean, you might say the first answer.
Because I could respond to the first answer and say,
yeah.
Oh, you're telling me you can't learn out from one the other? But what do you mean? They're both something that's alive. So if you told me one, I would have been able to figure out the other one. So Rashi is responding and saying, are you crazy? Of course you would not be able to do it. Just because they have that similarity doesn't mean that you would be able to figure out the whole category of itself.
I don't have anything much better to say on my own. I've been struggling with this. Again, Rashi seems to be, let's make sure we play out every here. What does Rashi seem to be saying? Rashi's bothered by two questions. The first question is, what does it mean? So that he tells us in the opening line is that it means that I need to have all four of them written in total. Then he wants to know, why did it change the order? It should have said Shor and Bor, and instead it says Shor and Mava. Right? So the first answer that he gives is that if we would have said Shor and Bor and not Shor and Mava, then I would not have been able to draw out the distinction of Imbo Ruach Chaim. Because once Bor was in the picture, then Imbo Ruach Chaim. Then Bor doesn't have Ruach Chaim, so I wouldn't have been able to draw that out anymore. Who cares? Maybe that's what's bothering him. I don't know, maybe that's what's bothering him. So what? Right?
Well,
why does it matter? Other than
you asked it well.
Meaning for clarity of style. There's no din that we wouldn't have learned out.
If you could ask why does Hashem not just make them sick in the other order?
No. I'm not questioning the intent of the author. The mission, I can question the intent of the author. That's what we're here for. And what did Rabbeinu Kadosh have in mind? So again, the first thing that he seems to be saying is that in order to compare it, we need it to be as similar, as possible. And we lose out on one way of comparing it if we do the order this way. The second one seems to be saying that if I would have had Shor, and if I would have, by not writing Shor and Bor, then I'm teaching you the Chiddush. Don't think everything that's alive is the same.
Wait, what? Oh, that answer's going on the second thing you said?
I think so. You think it's going on the first one?
That's how I answered originally in the Chiddush. Because how does that have anything to do with what you said? Just because it's the Ruach, just because they're alive.
I thought that the second shot, I don't know if I can hear anybody else's opinions. I thought the second shot in Rashi, or the second shot in Rashi, is dealing with learning one out from the other. The question of learning one out from the other seems to be the second question, right? Why do we have the Ruach Chaim got thrown in the first answer to the second question? Right? Okay. The question was, why did it switch from the order of Shor and Bor to Shor and Mavet? Why we need all of them? That we're not questioning anymore. That we're okay with the Lo Harei. So the first answer was that if I would have put it in the Shor and Bor order, then I wouldn't have been able to say that there's Ruach Chaim. And again, I'm not sure if it's so what is that answer. Maybe that's why he needs the second answer. Maybe it wouldn't have been as clear. I'm not sure. So
meaning then why separate?
What would have happened? Let's say. Right. Well, let's pretend for a second that it said Shor and Bor. So then I know that obviously you need, obviously Ruach Chaim is not the Mechayim. Excuse me. Not sure. Obviously Ruach Chaim is not what's driving us because Bor doesn't have Ruach Chaim. So I'm assuming that what the first answer basically is saying is I would have lost out on the step-by-step. I want to take it one step at a time. For clarity purposes. Right? I think that's the answer to the first one. So by putting the two that are most similar first, and then watching it develop, I can show that I can clearly explain why you need all of them. The second answer seems to be saying that because I would have thought, I don't know, maybe that's what it's saying, because I would have thought that Shor and Mava are both Yeshbo Ruach Chaim, if I wouldn't have said those right away, I may have concluded that you could learn one out from the other.
Right, that's telling you that they're not
So it's not really a ode. It's more like a continuation.
Right?
I don't know. I haven't said I don't have a good answer for this. I struggled with it for a while. I didn't see anybody that discusses it. But I'm really not sure what Rashi needed the extra vote for. Maybe you guys will come up with something. Just to make sure it's clear before we have to stop for this. This is the problem I'm talking about. See, we didn't get that far. I bet this session we'll sort it out in terms of making sure safe. First of all, tomorrow's early shear because of Bible. What time is shear supposed to be? Does anybody know?
N.
Yeah. 12?
I can check.
If you don't mind. But just the line of Tosos that you were mentioning before, again in that below, again, the Tosos was bothered by how come by Shor Mavet doesn't actually tell us what the difference is. So that we'll have to figure out. But Tosos says we can figure that out on our own. So a little bit of the Shem will come up with a few options of what differences there are for Shor Mavet. Maybe have it?
Okay, so it's Shear tomorrow. Well, base measure is like 9 to 10:45 this year, and then 10:46 to 12.
So maybe we'll do it for Tuesday. I think maybe Shear will be 11 to 12. Does that make sense? So let's assume 11 o'clock Shear. So we should get a decent amount of
12:15.
Okay, maybe we'll go to 12:15. We'll see. Okay. Let's assume 11 o'clock. Well, Be'ezus Hashem, we'll have a good amount of Seder time still. We should go over some of these things. Again, I'm trying to sort of, you know, get you comfortable with what we're doing. Again, a lot of these things, you guys could have done this on your own. It's a matter of sort of reorienting how you're thinking, how you're looking at the Mishnah. And we'll have a look at more, and then I'll figure out what additional Mishnah comes to you.
Thank you.
Right, Shkaya, any...